Managed developers have always wondered if they could ever write code as fast as C++ developers. Now that sort of performance comes to us mere mortals. That's what we're talking about in this episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm here with Xavier Zimba. He's a PM on the .NET Native team. We've heard a lot about it. It's been whispered through the corridors. Now we're going to see what it really means to us. .NET developers, we have a lot to celebrate. Xavier, thanks for being on the show. Before we start talking about .NET Native and all the black magic that you guys are creating there, tell us just a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, I'm a PM on the .NET Native team. I've pretty much been working on .NET Native since I joined Microsoft about 2.5 years ago. And we've kept it under wraps for quite a while. We did a public preview about a year ago with Windows 8.1 applications, and now we're pushing that forward and making this available more broadly with Windows 10 applications.
Okay, I'm excited to talk about it, but I think we should set the stage. Not every developer understands the problem that we kind of are solving, and so let's talk about managed languages. Let's talk about IL. Let's talk about JIT. Kind of give us the history of kind of how we've gotten here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, .NET is a product that's been around for quite a long time. It's well over a decade old at this point. And .NET was designed for a very different world, and it was designed to be very flexible. It was designed to work in server scenarios, designed to work in desktop scenarios. And we've extended it such that it works in client scenarios and low-power devices and works everywhere. Now, we had to build a system that's extremely flexible in order to do that, but there's some costs associated with that. For example, there's a lot of features that you have to put everywhere that don't exactly make sense on a client device, like your phone or like your Microsoft Surface. So .NET Native is designed to move us forward here and create a statically compiled applications written in C# that just run on your devices. So instead of having a JIT that's going to go from MSIL to your machine code, your ARM, your x64, x86, that all happens on the developer's machine. So when you've got the application, it's ready to run. There's no jitting that has to happen. There's no setup that has to happen. There's no engine that has to happen. It's just ready to go. And it's a lot faster.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand. So I'm in there writing my application. I'm writing it in C#, and I say compile. When I say compile inside Visual Studio, it's not taking it down to machine code. It first steps into MSIL. We don't actually call it the Microsoft Intermediary Language anymore. It's just IL, right?
Yep.
But it goes down to MSIL. And then I ship that off for my users to use.
Yep, that's in your exe.
That's what's actually in there executing, right? Then the runtime receives the exe, right? And it takes my IL and then it jits it. And what's the JIT process really doing?
So with the JIT process is essentially another compilation step. So that's where you're taking the IL, this intermediate language, and then it's being translated into very low-level machine instructions that each individual processor can run. So
I gotcha. So the IL is insufficient to run on a 32-bit machine, right? Because
it's not
that's
the same language.
That's not machine language, right?
Exactly.
It needs to go that next level. JIT stands for JIT, just in time. And so right when I receive it, I click it to run it, and it immediately compiles it. And there's, on a high-end machine, you don't even know it's happening. On a low-end machine, there is a small lag of time when that just in time has to occur.
And what's interesting is that just-in-time compilation happens when you execute a method. So once you go to execute a method, if you've never executed it before, that's when we go to JIT the method. So let's say that you have a bunch of IL, you have the .NET framework and you have an application with tons and tons of libraries, and then you go to start that application. And say you're in that startup path, you're loading up a bunch of these libraries because you're, say, deserializing some state and you're pulling some stuff down from the web, and then you've got this JSON library that's going to go and parse out some JSON. That's thousands and tens of thousands of methods that have to be jitted. And yeah, like you said, on your high-end machine, your quad-core machine that's under your desk, that happens almost instantaneously. But there can be performance concerns on a phone. And even if it can happen fast on a phone, that's still battery time that's being sucked out. So that's still CPU cycles. It still means that the processor has to spin. And that means that phone's getting a little hot and the user's battery is getting used a little bit. So you want to do that as little as possible so phone batteries can last longer.
Now, in the past, there's a couple of terms that I've heard along the way, right? So I know that I could write a phone application, send it up to the store, and before that application gets shipped down to a user's phone, it gets pre-compiled up in the cloud for them, right? So they don't have to have that. And I've always heard that as the Tritonization process. I know that's the old code name for it, but we just kind of turned it into a verb. But is that what we're doing? Is this Tritonization?
It's similar in spirit, but it's a very different technology stack. So let's actually backtrack a little bit before Triton. So to deal with this issue of having a lot of code that needs to be jitted when you start an application, we've had a variety of technologies. And .NET Native is the most recent of those, but we started with NGen.
The idea with
NGen was that you would take all the libraries or even possibly some of the applications that were on the user's machine, and you would pre-jit a bunch of the code on the machine, essentially as an install time step. If you've ever seen an installer that says, you know, hey, we're optimizing the application, a lot of the time, that's because NGen is going on there. Now,
that way you get during the installer, you get a little bit of a pause, but not your first execution.
Exactly.
You don't get a pause. So, I get it. So it's not on the developer's machine. They're not pre-jitting it, are they? Because they don't know the target.
Exactly. It's not even that they don't know the target. It's that the NGen step needs to happen locally with the runtime that's installed on the operating system. So it has to happen right there on the OS.
Okay.
So that was the first iteration. And it works great if you have something that's going to be installed once and then the user's going to run it every day, you know, like an Office product, like Microsoft Word. Going forward, so for phone, we developed Triton. And Triton sort of splits that up a little bit, where in the cloud, you essentially do something that looks very much like NGen, where you're pre-jitting almost all of the code.
Yeah.
But again, NGen is kind of fragile. You need to have some context about the actual device that you're going to install on. So with Triton, we have yet another intermediate language called MDIL instead of MSIL. It's machine dependent intermediate language.
Okay.
And Triton in the store goes and takes the MSIL that was part of that original XE, and essentially converts it most of the way to ARM code in MDIL, but there's a bunch of offsets and essentially just a bunch of annotations that help Triton then go, and we call it bind the application to the phone itself. So that little bit of work that needs to be done there at the end to essentially attach the application to the phone's runtime, that still has to happen on the device.
Okay, so NGen was the original way for developers to be able to kind of push the JIT to happen early, but it still had to happen on that device. Mm-hmm. And then Triton allowed us to do it in the cloud almost all the way, and then there's like a little baby JIT that occurs because of this machine-dependent IL.
Yep.
And then, so there's phase one. Here comes phase two. And we're in phase three today, right? And this is Project N. That was what you were codenamed for longest time.
So with Project N, we take all of that stuff that had to happen on the user's device out. And a big part of the reason that we can do that is Project N applications, .NET Native applications,
right?
They don't depend on really any sort of OS installed .NET Native framework at all. There's a little DLL that's in System32. It's called MRT100.dll, and that provides a couple of system services, but almost everything is in the application. So, for example, in a .NET Native application, system.object is actually part of the Apex package, is part of the application. And the garbage collector is installed app locally to the application.
So this is different than the .NET we grew up with, right?
Exactly.
Because that was, you trust that the CLR is there and it provides all these services. Now I'm shipping it with this almost to the level of that kind of luxury that C++ developers had. You could put an app on a CD and just put it into a machine and it would run because everything was included.
And that's exactly what we're moving to with this. In effect, all those things that C++ developers have were, you know, it's just an XE and it just runs. And maybe you need, you know, MSVCRT whatever.dll, you know, the C++ runtime. But everything else is self-contained and statically linked. That's what we're moving to with .NET for devices. And that's what .NET Native is. So you've got one application, and essentially the operating system can just go and run that application, and there's no extra steps that have to be performed.
Got it. So I can totally see how it's, now let me ask you, how do you get enough information about this target system that you have to be able to compile to it like that? Am I going to still need to create a 64-bit and a 32-bit in order for this to work?
Well, so that's definitely one thing that has to happen here. So as opposed to MSIL is machine independent. So those old Xe's, you know, it could run on an ARM device, it could run on an Itanium device once upon a time, and yeah. X64, X86 device. But once you have that ready to run C++ like application, then it is platform dependent. So the bits that are delivered to the user's machine are x86 or x64 or ARM.
So I am a developer. I'm creating my application. And I know I want it to run on phone. I know I want it to run on desktops as well. Am I then using .NET Native to create these assemblies for those different targets, or am I still building to MSIL and shipping it to the store?
Yeah, so that's sort of an interesting thing here. So when you distribute the application, you will build MSIL and distribute that up to the store, and that's going to allow us to do a bunch of things. One of the things is that we use MSIL today to essentially look at how many people are using different APIs. You know, each time you use an API, you vote essentially that API is important to me, and it's important to us to keep that kind of functionality around. Another thing is, let's say that we have a new architecture that we wanted to announce in the future, we would be able to easily take MSIL and build a new .NET Native compiler, and applications that are already available on current architectures will then just show up for the new architecture. So those are the sort of things that we want to enable. So
I give you IL, it's generic enough that you could go in any of the paths that you want to, so that's one reason I would do it that way, for sure.
So the way that .NET Native works is when you develop the application on your machine. I'm going to talk about all defaults. You can go and configure this in Visual Studio however you want. But when you have a Windows 10 app and you say and you hit F5 and you're in debug mode, we actually run against a copy of core CLR. So you're running essentially in the old world. And the reason that we do that is .NET Native is kind of like C++ compilation. It takes a little bit of time to compile. And .NET developers are really used to this really quick F5 experience. Oh, yeah. And productivity is a really key part of the platform. So we expect that most of the development will actually still be done in MSIL. But then when you go to release mode and you hit F5, then we'll compile with .NET Native, so that way you can test the application just as it would be distributed to people's devices.
Okay.
So what happens on your machine is you take the C# code, you go to MSIL, and then we go to the actual end Xe here, and then this is what you're going to test with when you're doing a release build. Now when you upload the package to the store, though, we're going to take this little intermediate artifact. That's going to get uploaded to the store, and then we're going to essentially do that same step, but it's going to happen in the cloud.
So I'm going to IL or I'm going to machine language. My debug experience is the same, though, basically. I don't feel a difference. I just have selected debug or release in the dropdown.
Exactly.
Okay. And so I'll leave it in debug most of the time because I'll have a much quicker experience because the compilation will be a little bit faster.
Well, you'll have a quicker experience, and you'll also get a lot of these features that we've been working on, you know, over the past many years. A good example of that is edit and continue. It's really tough for us to do edit and continue once we've compiled everything into this application and done a lot of optimization. Not to say we couldn't do it in the future, but that's a feature that's not presently there. So if you want all of these nice bells and whistles that we've built over the years, you're going to need to use Core CLR with MSIL.
Okay. Now, Zai, tell me, what is there a reason I should ever test in release mode? I mean, is there something going on there that's going to be noticeably different?
Yeah. So, first of all, you always should be testing on whatever it is that's going to actually be distributed to your customers. And for Windows 10 apps, .NET Native is going to run across all MSIL code. So really to everybody out there, please make sure that you are testing with .NET Native. Now, one key thing that we do with .NET Native is we do all sorts of different optimizations. And we've actually plugged in the C++ optimizer.
Okay. Okay.
Now,
oh.
It's a C++ optimizer, like Microsoft Visual C++ optimizer that's running in the back end with .NET Native.
Now, that let's be clear. I'm using both the optimizer and the compiler, and these aren't special C++ pieces. These are what C++ developers use today, not a special version of it just for us.
Well, it's the back end. So So it's not like we're converting to C++. You know, there's no C++ in the middle here that you can go and look at. But we do use the optimizing back end from the C++ compiler.
And so as that gets better,
those things just flow to .NET Native. And in fact, one of the things that we essentially started with was that back end without a lot of the optimizations, and the C++ team has been doing a great job essentially just taking the C++ optimizations and turning them on and seeing if there's any bugs and then working through those. We also had to teach that back end about the .NET type system, which was that was sort of the key thing, was coupling the type system and the optimizer. And making sure that the optimizer understood essentially what it's optimizing.
Yeah, of course, because when would it ever have seen those before this? This is the first time we've introduced those types to it.
Yep.
Okay, so I think I've got the gist of it here. I'm in debug mode. I'll switch over to release mode, make sure everything is cool there as well. Maybe I won't have the exact same debugging experience because like things like edit continue, but if I want those, I go back and I do it during my debug sessions, right? Okay. So this is going to be worth it, right? This makes my app better somehow?
Yeah. So essentially what we're doing is we've taken all of the JIT and startup costs, and we've reduced those as much as possible. So we see on average, and each app is different. Actually, these numbers tend to be pretty noisy. So I'd suggest, you know, anybody that's looking for performance numbers, you really should try it. You know, just try .NET Native on your application. But on average, for cold startup, so that's like, you know, you rebooted your computer and everything's still on the hard drive. It hasn't been loaded into memory yet. We see about 50% wins on average.
Wow. Just an average app. I write my app. It's going to be 50% better thanks to .NET Native.
Exactly. On cold startup. Now on warm startup, it ends up being about 30%. But still, that's a substantial win. And if you have an application, we do see some of these applications that take on a phone 3 to 4 seconds to start. That's something you can really see. Like you turn on .NET Native, and for free, your application has just gotten faster.
Yeah.
And that's really what we want to go for with .NET Native, is your existing application just better. It's just an optimization step.
And this is stunning by itself, no doubt about it. What happens? I already have an app in the store. You know, .NET Native is going to come live, and we're going to do all these things. Are you going to do something to the apps that are existing in the store? Are you going to go ahead and just run .NET Native against those guys? Or is it a developer step to go in and do something to get that optimization?
So it's going to be a developer step in the sense of planning on applying it to new Windows 10 applications.
Okay.
So when you upload a Windows 10 application to the store, you are essentially going to get all of this for free.
Okay.
This is the new world. This is the new model for Windows 10 apps.
Got it. So I definitely need to go into my existing Universal app and retarget it to Windows 10 to get this benefit.
Exactly.
Okay, now I know. And there's one good reason for sure to definitely do it. I can do this locally, though. But I would. That's only for testing purposes. I would never run it locally for the purpose of distribution. What about enterprise applications?
Exactly. So it's not quite the case that you never run it locally. So we'll create both the package that gets uploaded to the store that's containing MSIL, and then the package that you would sideload if you were, say, an enterprise customer. So if you're an enterprise customer, you can still get all this goodness. It's not like this is only for people who are distributing their applications through the store.
Okay, so that's brilliant. All right, that's a good story for our enterprise customers as well, who are really... All right, so I like these performance numbers. I like things like 50% better. Can we just say twice as fast? Is that the same as 50% fast? I mean, that's...
Well, it's you know, so one of the first things that I did when I started here was being on the performance team. So we tend to like to put a lot of subtlety and asterisks around the numbers. So I'd definitely say 30 to 50% faster on average, because it depends on the startup scenario. It depends as to whether it's the first launch of the application or a subsequent launch of the application.
Yeah. And a developer can still work against this and make their application load slower.
Oh, yeah. And these things, you know, there are certain applications that we've seen applications that only have, say, 20% wins. We've also seen applications that get 60% wins. So it can vary quite a bit depending on the application. But the numbers that I'm giving you here, though, those are for bigger applications. Those are for applications that have some set of features. Let's call them real world applications. It's not the template hitting F5.
Have you tested this against real applications, or are these just sample apps that you're writing?
No, we actually have been testing .NET Native against almost every single application that's in the Windows Store today.
Wow.
Simply using that as our existing test bed. So, you know, in the sense that it's an optimizer, we want to be able to optimize just about every single thing that's out there. So we go through and part of our regular testing is going through all the applications that are available in the store today and making sure that the thing works. And when it doesn't work, that's a bug.
So Xavier, one of the things I'm thinking is I'm a C# developer, and I'm very tempted to go over to be a C++ developer for the sake of performance. But now you're really introducing we won't call it parity because that's probably not realistic, but at least a reason for me to really be proud of the .NET code that I'm writing, because you're introducing brand new performance opportunities that maybe rival C++.
Yeah, so one of the key statements that we went out when we started this was C# with the performance of C++. A lot of the stuff comes down to here, though. In either language, you can write things that are performance or not performance. And we always suggest, if you have performance critical code, make sure you're analyzing that with our performance tooling, either the stuff that's in Visual Studio. We also have something called Purview that's worth looking at. What we have done, though, is we've looked at, a couple of, and they haven't been too complex of apps, because anybody that's writing a very complex application typically picks a platform and runs with it.
Sticks with it, yeah.
But when we look at simpler applications, we find pretty similar performance numbers, startup time and memory consumption across both C++ and C# applications written with
awesome.
.NET Native. So,
that is so awesome. Finally, I don't get snubbed by the C++ developers. You know what I mean?
And that's really what we want to go for here.
Snubbed by the C++.
Yeah. that's pretty, because we always hear that. Every once in a while you hear that from someone. The thing here is the performance time of both is they rival each other. And with .NET, we've always gone for developer productivity. That's the key thing, right? You don't have to chase down that memory issue where you release some object
that's
before,
right.
and you've got some you have a access violation.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that we want to avoid.
Track all those references still. You don't lose anything. You still have. Let me ask you some yes/no questions.
Yep.
You still have garbage collection and
yep.
all the stuff you kind of trust. You still have type safety and all the
yep.
things that .NET already gives you. All right. This isn't the death of MSIL by any means. This is just an ability to make JIT. It might be the death of JIT. I mean, honestly, it might be really close to the death of JIT.
I think it might be the death of JIT on client platforms. On server for server scenarios, you have a very different set of concerns, and you oftentimes want the ability to load up code dynamically.
Yeah,
to do that,
yeah.
you need a JIT. But
yeah.
when you're working on a client application, most of the time you have this pretty siloed experience, and that's all that you're delivering. So you have a much better understanding as to the set of scenarios that are going to be in there. So you don't necessarily need that.
Okay, client application. Let's get some terms defined here. This
yep.
is am I writing a WinForms application and using .NET Native?
So you're not right now. So for Windows 10 and Visual Studio 2015, we're only supporting .NET Native with Windows 10 store applications.
Okay.
So those are the ones that will run on any Win10 based platform. You know, these universal apps that'll run on phone and will run on desktop and on all of our other devices.
All right, so Windows 10 only, not Windows 8 dot anything. Visual Studio 2015 is where you get it. This isn't a story for older versions of Visual Studio. This is for .NET applications written for the store, not for WPF applications, yep. WinForm applications, or anything else, not for console applications, service, correct. None of that. This yep. is just for store applications in Windows 10 written in .NET, specifically .NET languages like C# and Visual Basic .NET?
Yes. That's exactly right, and right now we currently don't have Visual Basic .NET support, but that's actually something that we're working on, and okay. at build we're planning on having that. Okay. I actually shouldn't necessarily say that we don't have support. It's not present in Visual Studio. It's sort of there as in the background if you flip the right switches, but we're still working on testing it and getting the first set of bugs out. So gotcha. So it's not really public.
While Visual Studio 2015 is in preview, Visual Basic isn't supported yet, right?
Exactly.
Okay, I gotcha. That makes sense to me. Yep. So where does it work? I think we figured it out, right? I mean, this is a Windows 10 story. And yep. this is a store story, and you can really feel the drivers for this are for not necessarily low-end devices, but for devices where battery matters, devices where performance matters. And so you can see why, obviously, you would start with the store. It makes plenty of sense to me.
Yep.
And so it supports the phone. I think it's important to say, because there's been a few, while you guys have been in preview for the last year, phone wasn't really part of the story. That's part of the story now, because yep. now a universal app is a universal app, right?
Yep. And actually, the fact that universal apps are just universal apps, and we have the exact same app model everywhere, has made it much easier for us too.
I'll bet it has.
Yeah, it supports one platform. So even at our end, the unification of the platform stories is really coming together, and it makes our life internally easier too.
So we were talking about how JIT, this could be the end of JIT or something like that, but. This could also potentially be the end of the CLR too, could it?
Well, so the CLR is definitely changing, and we've talked a bit about the it's been called one dot net story before, and we've talked about this on the blog. But what we're really trying to move to is a model where we have smaller runtimes and a lot of out of band packages and a lot of out of band DLLs. So and those, when I say out of band, really that just means NuGet distributed. Certainly the people listening to this podcast have heard of ASP.NET vNext,
sure.
and what we call Project K. And with Project K, we're moving to this model where you have a very small runtime core CLR, which is actually the same CLR that's currently in the phone today, and the one that we're going to use for the .NET native debug time experience. And then you have a set of libraries that come with it, and those all get pulled down from NuGet. And .NET native is essentially moving in that same direction, where you have this set of libraries that get pulled into your application, and then baked into your application, so you're not depending on a bunch of OS functionality. So you're not waiting for Microsoft, say, to go in for this team, even to say, find the next do the next big release of .NET.
Yeah.
What we're instead doing is we can go and do updates to libraries faster. And if there's some particular thing that you need, you can go and you can pull that into your application mm-hmm. yourself.
Yeah, that makes your application totally composable, doesn't it? It makes it so I can make it as big or small as I need it to. Yeah.
But I do want though to just drill in a little bit on the death of the CLR and
okay.
CLR and that. So we're certainly not getting rid of the existing desktop CLR that's in Windows. There's a lot of people who are using it today. There's a lot of mission critical stuff that runs on it.
Oh yeah.
And actually, the way to think of that is not that it's going away at all. But it's actually going to continue to be the well-tested bedrock of the whole ecosystem. So whereas we'll have platforms like ASP.NET vNext and .NET Native that'll allow you to pull in different libraries, and we'll have a set of things that will say work together, but then you can go and you can pull in the bleeding edge of some library or this or that if you want it. The .NET version that's in the box installed with Windows will continue to be there. It won't get these improvements the second that they go out into the internet, but it'll be essentially the stable version that versions along with everything else. So you can still use it for your mission critical applications. You can still, Perfect. It's still the dependable.
Well, it has to be, right? I mean, this isn't even an option for my WPF application, right? And I'm going to build my entire business on that app. I better have a CLR it can run inside of, or I don't even have that as an option. Yeah. So obviously that path has to stay strong, right? This is, we're really talking about store apps right now and how on my phone, what I need out of the CLR, you have managed somehow, your magical team has managed to pull out of the CLR and make it so it ships with my application so that if my app is the only app on my phone, I still have all garbage collection completely taken care of and I don't have to worry about it, right? And the next app comes along, it might even be the next version of something else. It has it as well, but it's all internal and it does its garbage collection that way. Pretty brilliant. All right, Xavier, .NET native, it's all going to be ready for us, not at build, I mean, it'll all be there at build, but you'll be ready when Windows 10 comes, right?
Yep. Well, actually, it'll all be there. This story is all set, ready, locked and loaded to go for build. So
you guys have been working for a long time.
We have been.
Yeah.
It's been a very long journey, and even although this particular product's only been 2 years, like I said before, it's been the iterative, first with NGen, then with Triton, and then eventually getting to this. Those lessons really build off of each other, and it's not like like this is just something that came out of thin air. We've been working to this for a very long time.
It's beautiful. I'm excited about it. I'm excited that we can look at our .NET developers in the eye and say you can still write .NET and it's going to be an incredible experience for your users as well as developers. So we get that productivity story as well as performance story now, right? It's sort of been the dream we've all been knowing was eventually going to come. We didn't totally believe you guys when you said that you could take C# and give us C++ type performance, but here we are. 2015, mark your calendar, we actually reached it. Zai, thanks for being on the show today. If you're a developer and you want to try this out, Visual Studio 2015 is available for preview right now that you can download from preview.windows.com or visualstudio.com if you want to get it from there. Zai, thanks for being on the show. Great job with the product.
Yep, thank you very much for having me.
We'll see you again.